This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Carrie Culberson? First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Clarissa Ann Culberson was born on January 31, 1974, and lived in Blanchester, Ohio. This is about an hour east of Cincinnati. Clarissa went by the name Carrie. She lived with her mother and sister and worked as a nail technician. Starting in 1994, Carrie had a boyfriend named Vincent Doan. By the fall of 1995, Vincent was obsessed with Carrie. He would call her at work several times a day and spend a lot of time with her. When Carrie went someplace alone, Vincent would often show up wherever she was. Carrie reported to others that Vincent was physically violent toward her on several occasions. Here are just a few examples. Vincent smashed the windows of her vehicle when she was inside of it. He hit her in the stomach on several occasions. In April 1996, Vincent hit Carrie and threw her to the ground repeatedly. On July 28, 1996, Carrie filed a criminal complaint against Vincent after he struck her in the head with a space heater. Carrie had to get 5 staples to close the wound. One could argue that Vincent's behavior gives new meaning to the phrase, in the heat of the moment. On August 25, Vincent held Carrie at gunpoint in his vehicle for about 5 hours. Carrie and Vincent were scheduled to appear at a court hearing in early September 1996 regarding a complaint that Carrie had filed about the space heater attack. Carrie had grave concerns about Vincent and had talked about breaking up with him, but continued to see him. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On August 28, 1996, Carrie went to a bar with 2 of her friends. They played volleyball and consumed alcohol. Vincent showed up and demanded that Carrie let him drive her home, but she declined his offer. Vincent was pretty angry as he was leaving. He squealed the tires on his vehicle when he pulled out of the parking lot. He wanted to prove that he was a defiant and intimidating individual by pushing an accelerator down quickly. Someone else took Carrie home later. She was dropped off at her residence at about 11:30 p.m. It does not appear as though Carrie ever entered her house. A neighbor saw Carrie's 1989 Honda CRX back out of the driveway and drive down the street. The vehicle lights were not activated. The next morning, now on August 29, Carrie's mother noticed that both she and her Honda were missing. Her mother went to the police, but they weren't too interested in investigating. They thought that perhaps Carrie left on her own. Carrie's mother spoke to Vincent about her missing daughter. According to Carrie's mother, Vincent's first story was that he had not seen Carrie after encountering her at the bar. His second story was that Carrie arrived at his home at 12:30 a.m. in her motor vehicle. She honked her horn, but Vincent refused to talk to her. He said that Carrie appeared to be intoxicated. In a third story provided by Vincent, he said Carrie arrived at his house. He walked outside wearing a towel. She wanted to go drinking, but Vincent told her that he couldn't because he had to go to work. Eventually, the police decided to investigate Carrie's disappearance. They spoke to Vincent's neighbor, Billy Joe Brown, who reported she had seen something interesting on August 29 at 12:30 a.m. Looking through a window, she observed Vincent, Carrie, and a red vehicle. Vincent chased Carrie as Carrie called for help. Carrie tripped in a hole in the yard. Vincent grabbed her arm and punched her face. He then said, quote, "I told you next time I'd kill you, you blanking blank," unquote. As the witness went to get her husband, she heard tires squealing. This is something that Vincent liked to do. When she looked out of the window again, Vincent, Carrie, and the red vehicle were gone. On September 3, the Blanchester Police Department performed a search of a junkyard owned by Lawrence Baker, Vincent's father. A cadaver dog alerted to a small pond. officers informed the police chief, Richard Payton, that they wanted to drain the pond. The police chief told everyone to leave the property, and he left it unsecured overnight. The next day, the police drained the pond and found footprints at the bottom and a muddy path of weeds leading away from the pond. This made it look like the police chief gave Vincent's family an opportunity to hide evidence. Perhaps Carrie's body had been in that pond. After this, another witness came forward to the police with an interesting story. Lori Baker, who was married to Vincent's half-brother, Tracy Baker, said that Vincent appeared at their house on August 29 at 3:15 a.m. Vincent asked to speak to Tracy. Lori said that Vincent was not wearing shoes or a shirt and had blood smeared on his chest, arms, and jeans. After Vincent took a shower, he and Tracy left the house with a gun and garbage bags. They returned to the house at about 6 a.m. Tracy had what appeared to be drops of blood on his boots. Vincent told Lori that he, quote, couldn't imagine hurting someone and holding her until she died, unquote. Lori's twin sister, who was also at the house, corroborated part of her account. On March 21, 1997, Vincent was charged with 4 counts of kidnapping. Later, he was additionally charged with aggravated murder. Carrie was never found. Her vehicle remained missing as well. On August 7, 1997, Vincent Doan was found guilty of aggravated murder and 3 counts of kidnapping. He was acquitted on 1 count of kidnapping. Vincent was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Richard Payton lost his job as police chief. He was accused of assisting Vincent's family in covering up a potential crime scene. He ultimately pleaded guilty to 2 counts of dereliction of duty. In June 1998, Vincent Doan's half-brother, Tracy Baker, was found guilty of obstruction of justice and tampering with evidence. He received 8 years in prison and was released in 2005. Vincent's father, Lawrence Baker, was also tried for obstruction of justice, but he was found not guilty in August 1998. Carrie's family sued the village of Blanchester and were awarded $3.75 million.
Kann eine Karriere neugierig sein? Komm zu EY und erlebe es selbst. Arbeite an spannenden Projekten, gestalte die Wirtschaft von morgen und entwickle dich auch selbst weiter. Im Team Assurance, Tax, Consulting oder EY Parthenon, Strategy and Transactions. Shape your future with confidence. Jetzt bewerben auf jobsgermany.ey.com.
Now moving to my analysis. Vincent Doan maintains his innocence. He said that Carrie probably just ran away. He claims that he does not know where she is. Vincent has supporters who believe that his conviction was a miscarriage of justice. This brings me to the question, was Vincent Doan actually guilty of murder? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that he was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Vincent had a history of controlling and obsessive behavior, as well as violence. Many of Carrie's friends testified that she told them on several occasions about how violent Vincent was. Just a few days before Carrie disappeared, Vincent allegedly attacked her with a space heater. Vincent admitted that he once slapped Carrie, although he said this was his only act of violence toward her. According to Carrie's mother, Vincent supplied her with 3 different stories about what happened on August 29. Vincent's neighbor reported seeing Vincent and Carrie fighting on August 29. Vincent was the aggressor. Lori Baker, the wife of Vincent's half-brother, said that Vincent had come by their house on August 29 with blood on him. As far as the theory that Carrie simply left the area of her own volition, this is hard to believe for several reasons. Carrie did not have the financial resources to leave town. Her bank account had an overdraft of $3.09. She had to scrape change from her ashtray to buy beer on the night of her disappearance. None of her financial accounts were accessed after she went missing. 2 days before Carrie disappeared, she took an entrance examination for nursing school. She told people she wanted to stay in town because her younger sister had important events coming up, like a prom. None of Carrie's clothes were missing from her residence. And if she was going to leave, why would she leave late at night without telling anyone and never make contact again. Moving to the exculpatory factors, there was no physical evidence that Carrie was dead. No DNA, no blood, nothing at all. The police did not find any physical evidence at the residence of Lori and Tracy Baker, which would support Lori Baker's story. If Billie Jo Brown witnessed Vincent attack Carrie, why didn't she call the police immediately? Vincent's father and stepmother both testified that they had visited Vincent's home on August 29 at about 1:30 a.m. They found him asleep on the couch in the living room. It's worth noting that at 1 a.m., Vincent placed a call from a residence of one of his friends. The friend's residence was about 20 miles away from Vincent's house, so it would be difficult for Vincent to leave there at 1 o'clock and be asleep on his couch in his house at 1:30 a.m. Carrie had told a friend of hers that she was thinking about moving out of state. There have been dozens of sightings of Carrie and of her Honda CRX. A few examples. A woman who knew Carrie said that she saw her driving on Fancy Street in Blanchester on August 28 at about 11:30 p.m. Carrie's vehicle was full of clothing. Two women who were driving near Mount Oreb, Ohio, on August 31, picked up a female hitchhiker. The women later identified this person as Carrie after seeing her photograph on the news. Two clerks at a convenience store identified Carrie as a person who came into the store on the same day, August 31. A young woman driving a red Honda CRX was spotted on September 5. The license plate had the same first four characters as Carrie's license plate. Carrie was seen walking along a river on September 6. She was spotted at a gas station on September 9, and she was seen driving her vehicle on September 10. Vincent denied telling Carrie's mother multiple stories. He said his story was always that Carrie arrived at his house on August 29 and wanted to go drinking. He refused to go with her. All the friends who testified about Carrie's claims of violence were simply repeating what Carrie supposedly told them. Maybe Carrie wanted them to believe she was a victim, but she was not in reality. When considering all the evidence, do I think that Vincent Doan is guilty? Yes, I believe he is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Here's what I think happened in this case. This is just a theory, my opinion. Carrie was attracted to Vincent because she thought of him as a bad boy. She was upset that he repeatedly physically attacked her. She told her friends about a few of his violent acts, but concealed many others because she was ashamed. Carrie believed that she could fix Vincent. She could make him nonviolent. After arriving home from the bar late on August 28, Carrie drove away from her house and visited Vincent early on August 29. Vincent attacked her and put her in the Honda. He then drove her somewhere remote and killed her. With the help of his half-brother, Vincent disposed of Carrie's body and of her Honda. Vincent's father owned a junkyard, so Vincent probably knew of ways to make a vehicle disappear forever. After getting arrested, convicted, and sent to prison, Vincent continues to deny responsibility. He thought that by getting rid of Carrie's body and her vehicle, he would never have to pay for her murder. Now moving to my final thoughts. Sometimes a homicide appears to come out of the blue. An offender with no history of violence just loses control one day. This is not one of those cases. It was clear long in advance that Vincent was capable of murder. When Carrie looked at Vincent, she saw someone other than who he really was, a person who she could redeem, who she could save from himself. There's nothing wrong with compassion and having hope for a violent person to change, but trying to save an offender should never involve putting the rescuer in danger.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.